Go ahead. One 80s rap song.
Hip, hop, hibbity hip, hoppy, don't stop, a rocket to the band, man. So, what
is that? Is that?
That's 70s.
That's 70s?
Yeah. I feel like we're back a little far there.
That's like the 80s.
My name is Wonder Mike, and I like to say hello. To the red, to the brown.
Never mind, forget it.
Purple and yellow.
IKR, I Know Right, is a podcast about women for women.
In a world that forces us to choose between extremes, black and white, red and blue, we believe you have more freedom than you've ever grasped. What if there was another approach to the important topics of your life? Things like sex, race, self-image, even FOMO.
What if there was a third way that both culture and religion missed? This season, we're looking for that elusive third way. The way of grace, of challenge, of growth, the way of Jesus. IKR, Real Conversations with Real Women.
We are with Brian Tome, and we are talking about
men. Today is really about understanding men so that we can have successful relationships with them in dating, marriage, friends, if you have a son. And so we're here talking to our senior pastor, Brian Tome. He is the senior pastor of Crossroads Church here in Cincinnati. And he has written a book called The Five Marks of a Man. And we listened to the women in our community who just had some questions about men. So we're going to talk about the book. We'll talk about men. We're going to ask you some questions. And
so just so Brian knows, as we've approached this season of IKR, what we're doing is taking topics that touch the life of almost or near, I think all of them touch the life of every woman. And we're exploring them from what does culture tell us about that thing? And what does religion tell us about that thing? And are those helpful messages in getting to really what would Jesus tell us about that thing? And so we're going to kind of tackle the topic of men today. And I know that sounds broad, but actually, really what we're after is how we women can have great relationships with men, with the men in our lives. And we invited you, Brian, because you're kind of our local expert on men. So I have a fun question for us before we roll into the topic. What do you think is the best thing about being a man? And we get to answer too.
Wow.
Even though we're not.
Wow.
What's the best thing about being a man?
You know, when I speak to men, one of the things I say when it's just a room of men is I say, being a man is awesome. I mean, seriously. I assume if I was a woman, I would say it's a blessing to be a woman, and I would feel, I assume and hope that I would, but I'm a guy, I'm just telling you, one very simple one, very practical, tactical and practical, we get to pee standing up.
Agreed.
That's a huge deal. It's not just pee standing up, but when I'm in my sleeping bag, I can pee on my side into a Nalgene bottle.
That's fairly awesome.
Yeah,
I'm going to give it to you. What do you think is the best thing about
it? I'm speechless because I'm wondering, I've never drank out of any of your Nalgene bottles. I've never drank out of any of your water bottles, but now I will remember.
You remember that.
Yes. And I do.
What do you think would be great about being a man?
Oh, this would be interesting. What do you think would be great about being a man?
You know what? I would say not having to care so much about your appearance. Some guys do, but I think that just in general.
That's true.
You can roll out about five.
And it's a pair of jeans and a t-shirt.
That's true.
It's a good look.
Yep.
It's all good.
Yes. I actually would have said something similar. Yeah. That's funny. Yeah. My husband, I'll say like, you know, we got to leave in like 9 minutes. He's like, yeah, I'm just take a quick shower. Like,
that's not a real thing.
What? You mean 49 minutes ago you needed to take a quick shower.
It's a village to raise all of this.
I know.
That's too much.
Right? I know, right?
That's right.
I know, right?
I knew it. I knew it.
Thank you, Allie.
Anyway, so here's where I'd like to start. I'd like to start because I think that Brian can really speak to this. And I think my guess is he would say his book really speaks to this. Is what are the messages in our culture today about men? What makes a good man, according to our culture, not saying that's the truth, just saying these are the messages we get about men in our culture today. Can you like give us an overview of what you think is going on?
Well, men are lagging behind women by about 30 years in the area of being conformed to cultural norms. So Cosmopolitan and all that whole thing told a woman what her body needed to look like, what her lipstick and all that kind of stuff. It gave the image of a woman that women have had to live up to, and it's a crushing image. men are now where you all were probably in the 70s, where men's magazines and everything else, I'm not talking about pornography men's magazine, I mean like, you know, men's health, men's fitness, those kind of things, are giving an image of what men is, that's simply unsustainable. And so when you talk about not having to look as good as women do, I think that's true, but that's also changing. We're the first generation has manscaping, where you have men who are taking care of themselves like a woman would. We're trying to fit into the norms. I think what's most difficult today about a man is it was a very simple understanding of what a man was in previous generations. I'm not saying it was easy. I'm just saying it was simple. It was go out, kill something, whether that's an animal or whether that's a new account, bring some dough back into the family, allow people to live, and don't get in trouble. That was it. You did that. It was good. Now it's like, okay, you got to provide, and you've also got to have the sensitive side, and you also got to be a really, really good listener, and you also have to be a good nurturer, and you also have to be, I mean, there's just a lot of layering on where, and I know women do too. I'm not saying men have it worse than women do in this thing, but yeah, there's not really consensus on what a man looks like anymore. And so you are constantly feeling like you don't measure up because there's always a new standard for you to measure up to.
You know, it's occurring to me as he's talking, and I'm curious what you think about this, Latasha. At the same time that he's describing this change with boys and men suddenly not having one simple standard and no clear definition of what it means to be a man right now in our culture, we're also hearing cultural messages about women.
Oh, gosh.
And it's really fascinating to me about the collision of those because clearly the strongest message about how to be a woman today is very has all the underpinnings of feminism. I'm not saying every message is a feminist message. Yep. I'm just saying that feminism is informing a lot of the messages that we hear as women, which means you can do anything.
That's right.
A man can do. You're strong. You're smart. There's no different role. There's no different way. And so at the same time, men are kind of like, what am I supposed to be doing here again? Women are going, well, I can take your place.
I'll pick up the slack.
I can do that. Mm-hmm. No problem.
Yep.
It is sort of a perfect storm because women are being told you can, should, and are equipped to take the place of any man to do anything anywhere. And that's an interesting dynamic I never thought about from the male perspective when Brian describes also sort of crumbling expectations about what it means to be a man. And we're like, thank you very much. No problem.
That's right. I was just having conversations with a girlfriend who wants to start a family, and I totally understand wanting to start a family. She's not married, but her posture towards it was like, I got this. I make my money. I live where I live. The baby will have an au pair, whatever the thing is. Like, I don't need this. And I'm like, if it were just that easy, just to have an au pair and a couple of dollars in the bank, if that was all that you need, speaking from experience, you would know that you would want a male in that home with your kid, for sure.
But it's so interesting because that is an accurate reflection of what women are being told today, I think, about the place of men in our lives. But here's the other thing, and I'd love your take on this. I still think underneath the surface, one of the reasons that women embrace the message of, I don't necessarily need a man or I can take his place or whatever, is because for a long time, and maybe still under the surface of a lot of women, the status of having a man it means that you're worth something.
Yep.
And I think that something underneath that is that women are tired of being told they're only worth something
if they have a man.
I don't fault women, quote unquote, for not wanting to be told you're only worth something if you can have a man.
Yeah.
That's not right.
That's right.
That's a lie.
Absolutely.
And men are worth having.
Yes.
They're worth having relationship with. They're a critical part of how God made, his creation.
You're making me feel like an object here. Men are worth having. You're just going to have me? You don't even know me. You don't understand my story or who I am. You're just going to have me and own me?
What kind of
podcast is this? I know, right?
I really meant to communicate your value.
I'm not a piece of flesh, Allie. I'm not. I am more than that.
All right, let's take a turn before it goes too badly here. So, Brian, you're a pastor. Latasha said you're the senior pastor of our church, Crossroads Church. And what do you think, as you look at, since we've had a few minutes on what does culture say about men, what do you think, as you think about what religion or the church has had to say about men? Is that different than culture? Is it the same? Is it helpful? Is it not? What does religion tell us about men?
Church hasn't had much of anything to tell us about men. The only thing church has told us about men and women are traditional gender roles and traditional translations or interpretations of Bible verses. The church hasn't helped us out in this way at all. There's a massive masculine crisis in American Christendom, massive. Churches are made up of 70% female, 30% male. That's on a good day.
Yeah.
Generally, the most committed people to their faith you can think of, who's the top five most committed? They're generally, a high percentage of those are women.
Mm-hmm.
American Christianity has a hard time dealing with men. That is not the case with Islam. Islam in America, the most hardcore committed are men. So it's not that men aren't drawn to spirituality of any type. It's that men aren't drawn to Christianity in its current context.
And do you think that's because the religion, Christianity, has sent men a message they need to tone it down, be soft, be kind, be nicer? What is it?
Yeah, I think it's churches are not intentionally but accidentally wired for the female voice from start to finish. Hmm. They're just accidentally wired for it. Most Sunday school teachers are females. Yes, you have most senior pastors are males. And yes, you've got most board members in churches are probably males. I'm not saying there isn't a masculine influence in churches. But if you take a look at who those pastors preach to and how they structure their churches for, they structure it for women. Because that's their market. I just found out that my book has been selling really, 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 really well. And how many female buyers do you think I have in my book? What the percentages of female buyers?
I'd say half.
I was going to say 60 or 70.
Yeah, 70%. 70% of everybody who's bought my book is a woman.
Wow.
And what that speaks to isn't that the content in there is for women, though women are fascinated to know about men. You can find that out about my book. What it speaks to is the entire Christian publishing industry is geared around women, because women like to read.
Yeah.
The social structure in our churches are tend are prone to the way women like to interact. Women just like to converse. They like to hang out, like to have coffee with one another. Mm-hmm. Men don't. We have to do something together. We have to act on something together, and very few churches have something active to draw men into. So there's a huge disparity in how men think. And most churches do not understand how men think and don't speak that language.
I just see a mess here.
Yeah.
Religion hasn't really helped us much. The church, the Christian church, hasn't really helped us much to further define what a good man should be. So, Brian, as you think about it and as you wrote your book, can you lay out for us, like, okay, here's the deal. If you were going to say, this is what strong
very
men
simple.
Really
it's
look like.
It's not easy. It's very simple, though. It's five things. A man has a vision, but a boy lives day to day. So men have vision. Two, men work, and a boy only wants to play. Men work. There's got to be vision, there'll be work. Three, men are team players, and boys want to be the MVP. We have fewer and fewer males who are asking women out because we have fewer and fewer males who want to be on a team. Marriage is the ultimate team, team players. Four, men are protectors, boys are predators. This is why we have as much rape and all that kind of stuff happening with boys in our culture. Men protect. We save. We save money. We want money, not money to buy more truck parts. We want money to be able to give money to people. We want money to have savings so we can backstop somebody. And then finally, men take a minority position. Boys always want to be in the majority. Men are used to believing things that other people don't believe. Men are used to saying things that no one else wants to say. Those are the five sort of tension areas.
So we've been looking for all season with every topic that we jump into the quote third way. Not the way that culture says, not the way the church has maybe taught us to be, but the way of Jesus. Do you think those five qualities reflect his character?
Completely. The book was not written as a proof text for who Jesus was, but you could see his life in all five of those things. I don't know if we have time for me to give a whole sermon on that, but yes.
I mean, just give us a favorite example, just one of the qualities
minority, just, you've heard it said, but I say to you, Mm-hmm. All that happens is because groupthink says this. He's in the minority, and all the other religious people, the rabbis, or a good percentage of them, are putting him to death. That's minority poor. He's protecting by going to the cross. That's being a protector. He's got a vision to be about his father's business, the kingdom of God. He wants to be that's his vision. He works. He has a blue-collar job as a builder before he actually goes into ministry, and he's working. He's walking. It's hard, hardcore stuff. And what's my fifth one? I think I forgot my fifth one. It's in there someplace.
Yeah. We believe you.
Yes.
Do you want to jump into some of the listener questions?
Yeah.
I really do, too.
These questions came from our listeners on Instagram. We want to know why men identify so much with the work they do.
Well, every guy wants to feel like they matter. And the way we matter, one tangible way, is what I'm doing with my hands. Who am I? What value am I doing at the end of the day? When a guy loses his job, it is crushing. It's crushing. I don't know if it's as crushing as when a woman loses her job, but I know from the male's world, it is crushing. Not just because if he has a family, he's not sure how he's going to provide for him, but then he doesn't even know who he is. What does he do? Now, I know that we say, well, who we are is we're a son of God. We're a child of Christ. Yeah, I know that. I know that. But no child of mine is ever going to be bored in the Tome household. Am I ever going to say, okay, you're a child of the Tome household, so that's all you need to know. That's all you need to do. Just sit in the couch and think about that every day. Just be in the awareness of you're a child of Brian Tome, and that should be enough for you. And if that was enough for one of my kids, I would kick them out of the house because I would not be happy with that kid.
That's not acceptable. Yeah.
That is not acceptable. What we do does bring meaning to our life. It does. It may bring too much meaning to some people's lives, but it's very, very important. Mm-hmm. So we've got to, as a man, know what is the purpose I'm here on this world for, and what am I actually doing with my hands? That gives me definition.
That actually goes to our second question, mm-hmm. which is vision the most important mark since it's your first? That was asked.
I don't think it's the most important mark.
Okay.
I name it first just because I don't know why I just name it first. It's not the most important mark, and vision normally comes later, at least the vision you're going to throw your life behind. Mm. Think about us. The vision we had for our life when it was 12 looked a heck of a lot different than it did when it was 18. Mm-hmm. And probably when we had vision at 30, like, okay, that one might work.
Yeah.
So vision changes a lot. It tweaks a lot. But the other ones are much more core, much more rigid.
Okay.
Protector, you can start doing that when you're 12.
Right.
Right? Team player, other ones like that. So no, vision is not the first. It's not the most important either.
That's great. Actually, I feel like for women, because of the nature of some of our other questions, we won't get to all of them.
Yeah.
There are several that push at, what if my husband doesn't have a vision? You know, or how can I support my husband finding a vision? And I think it's a relief, actually, to hear someone articulate the fact that vision can change. I think we want to sign on a dotted line. And so it's nice to just let the pressure off a little bit.
The key thing about vision, as I'm defining it in the book, is this is not be the next Steve Jobs or the next Jesus where you got some massive thing that's out there. It'd be great if you can get there, good. But well, really it is, though, is it's something you don't have right now that is going to be in the future and it's going to be difficult, which is why you're hitting the same nail today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If you just started college, a good enough vision is finish college.
Amen. Mm-hmm. You know what? Why? How come guys say, I don't know? So you ask them a question.
Don't know.
You don't know? I know, right? That's
I know, right?
Is that a thing?
Let's talk about the male psyche for a moment.
Oh, Lord.
Far from the way we want to appear to you, we are incredibly insecure creatures. So a guy saying, I don't know, is less risky than telling you what he thinks and then him being proved wrong.
That's helpful.
That's super smart.
Yeah, I think the heart of that is like women want to hear your self-reflecting. Yeah. They want to hear your processing, and guys just won't offer that a lot.
Like, no, thank you.
No, we're afraid of being wrong. And most of us just aren't that introspective either.
But what am I supposed to do then? I just accept.
Keep coming at us.
Okay, great.
That's cool. No,
okay.
Keep coming at us.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Keep asking.
Good.
Just don't be too frustrated or take it too personal if we're not giving you what you want. That's all.
Great.
Okay, so here's a dating question. What is the number one indicator that you are dating a boy?
Oh, wow. That is a good question. The test that I would do if you were dating a boy, a test, I would have a sexual boundary discussion early in the relationship. And I would watch how that guy responds to that discussion. He's willing to engage on it, on the discussion, and he's, you know, he's up for that. He's up for that kind of rigorous thing. I think that'd be a great test market.
Interesting. Okay, that's a great answer. Okay, so what if I'm married to a boy and I know it and I want a divorce?
Well, if you're a Christian, then that's probably not an option to you, because Jesus is wedded to a bunch of immature people. It's called you and I, and he doesn't divorce us. So unless you want God to divorce you after you frustrate him with whatever your stuff is, unless you're up for him, you got to be really careful about divorcing somebody just because they're frustrating you. So that's the worst thing I think. Second thing I'd say is, if you're committed to a life of being single and you could really be happy with that, just understand, if he's gone, very slim pickings out there. I hate to tell you, the likelihood that you're going to find a guy better than him is not high.
Agreed.
And why do you agree? Tell us, please.
Because I date. Because I mean, right. I'm out there and right. it's hard.
You're trading one set of problems for a whole other set of problems you just can't really have your mind on. You can't. Yeah. I think a better question would be, if you can, to say, my husband's really frustrating me. It looks like he has some boyish tendencies. As his partner, what can I do to come alongside him and strengthen him? What can I do to come alongside him and help him? Mm-hmm. What would that look like? And I don't know what that looks like. But if you think about your husband as a struggling adolescent, would you have more empathy on him, with him? I'm not saying he should be a struggling adolescent. I understand your frustration there, but he's a human being, and he's got some struggles, and maybe that's part of why you're here. You're here to backstop him and help him get him to another place.
So what if you're friends with a boy? We had a lot of boy questions. What if you're friends with somebody who has kind of immature, boyish, like, tendencies, like you put it? Is it okay for a female friend to have that conversation with a man? Not involved, not dating. Like, hey, can I do that with a guy friend?
You're both single?
Yeah.
Sure.
Both people single?
Yeah,
you can
sure.
pull them aside and say, dude.
Are you allowed to do it, or is it going to work? What are you saying?
Is it going to work?
Oh, it's definitely not going
to work. Is that going to be a fruitful
No, it's definitely not going to work.
Is that going to be a fruitful conversation?
No, it's definitely not going to work. No.
Why not?
Am I going to pull aside the president of the United States and give him some? No, he's going to say, you don't know. Am I going to pull aside an NFL quarterback and say, hey, you don't know anything about me. So no guy's going to understand what you're saying.
Okay, so does that mean a guy needs to do that, or it's just life experience that needs to?
I think you still should,
him?
As a woman. You still can.
Okay.
You could be the one of the rare ones. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that. It's just
not going to be the path.
Not the highest hit rate.
Okay.
Having another guy who he respects do that is always the best. That's the key thing, who he respects. And therein is part of the problem we have with men. We are very isolated, and therefore we don't have a lot of people we personally know who we respect. Mm. I mean, it's crisis out there, ladies. It's crisis. I can't speak to the females, but it's crisis for guys. Mm. We don't have friends. The friends that we do have are people we see at work for the most part, or they're people we went to college with. And once work ends, we don't have those folks. Once we got out of college, we don't have those folks. So most of us don't have a group of people we're leaning into and laughing with and being sharpened by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge. Mm.
Is it acceptable? You kind of mentioned this. I hate to back up into it, but can men and women really be friends? Is there a circumstance where that could happen? Married, not married? I don't know.
Oh, we're just friends. We're just friends. You might just be friends, ladies.
I'll tell you,
he is not just friends.
He
has a long-term vision to bag you is what he has. Yes. And yes, there's exceptions. I guess there is exception. They're exceptions. They're exceptions. And that's not what you should be making your relational choices based on.
Okay, let's get into kids. We had some great questions about
children.
Sons, kids. Brian has two daughters, if you don't know that listening. Did you give opinions about the guys that they were dating or do date? Because Mariah still dates. She's not married.
I definitely had a need to let my daughters know the sexual drive of boys, because I was there. Okay. And I don't mean by boys, that's a little term, of young males. The sex drive of young males, the testosterone that courses through their veins at the rate it does is really astonishing. I mean, that's like all you think about. That's like
all you think.
And when you're not thinking about it, all it takes is just like the littlest trigger and you're right back there. Yeah. You're right back there.
And that's like 15 to 35?
15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20. That's like, or
yeah, dating age.
It is. So I wanted to make sure my daughters knew that.
Okay, that's real.
This is a big deal for guys. Mm. It is, and you don't understand it.
Mm. Great.
What about moms who have sons? What's the best role for a mother who has a son?
I would encourage mothers to give their son an outlet for danger. That's what I would encourage him
you
to
talk
do.
Talk about giving your like son that. Knives and
right,
boomerang,
throwing knives, whatever. Allowing their sons to, as it climb trees, is it? Now, if the son doesn't want to do any of that, okay. But I would just encourage mothers that you really want that little guy to have some energy. You want him to become physically self-aware, because as he becomes physically self-aware, he feels more competent, and as he feels more competent, he starts to feel more confident, and he starts to have less to prove to others. So rough play and potentially dangerous things are frowned on everywhere in culture today, but I'm a big fan of it as it relates to young boys. One of the fascinating pieces of research I found out was Dr. Stuart Brown from the National Institute of Play. He actually has an institute. It's called the National Institute of Play. It came out of his research with serial killers. So he went to people who were on death row, interviewed these serial killers. And you know what the one thing that he found in common with every serial killer, what they all had in common?
What?
They all had an absence of rough play. That was the only thing. It was an absence of rough play.
Weird. And so it's going to find an outlet one way or the other.
Well, no. Well, what his theory is, and I could be wrong on this, or he could be wrong, but his theory was, because they were never like in wrestling matches or falling out of trees or something, they never got elbowed in the jaw. They never felt pain, and so they never developed the ability to empathize with somebody else's pain.
Oh,
so being
wow.
a serial killer
Whoa.
Was easy, because you never felt that person's pain, because you had never been in pain yourself. We're bubble wrapping all of our kids.
Wow.
We're making it so that our kids never feel pain, physical pain or emotional pain, and it's not healthy.
Wow,
that's
wow.
really interesting.
That totally blew my mind. Yes. I did not see that coming. Wow. Okay, I could talk about this all day, but
we can't.
You got
stuff to do.
I know. We're out of time. So why don't you tell us, if you want to get more, if you want to hear more, Brian and his Five Marks of a Man, where can we pick up your book? Where's it available? In what format?
You can get Five Marks of a Man in digital format, Amazon.com, Kindle. You can find it in bookstores everywhere. You can also go to briantome.com. We've got some articles and blogs and some other stuff on there that you can use to hopefully advance your thinking.
Any last questions from your perspective? This is it, Latasha.
This is it?
This is your dating advice machine right
yeah,
here.
Yeah, really.
Come on. Do you know any men? I don't know. Do you know,
what?
Do you know anybody? I'm
but
just
you
saying.
Can.
That
I'm
is asking
a great,
for a friend.
You can ask that.
I'm asking for a friend.
No, she can. She has a boyfriend.
Listen, oh, you can.
I can listen. Oh,
you got a boyfriend. You're too tired already.
I hope he's not listening.
He's not listening. We'll edit all of this out. Listen, it's not...
IKR is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio. We always love to hear from our listeners, so drop us an email at ikr@crossroads.net, or you can find us mostly active on Instagram at IKR Podcast. Our music is thanks to Mae Klingler, and you can find more from her at mayklingler.com or on Spotify or iTunes. You won't be sorry you did.